Thank you, Doug and music team. Let me get set up here. You can turn to Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19, we'll be covering the second half of the chapter this morning. Before our text, however, I would like to talk about Gordon Westwood. In 1979, at age 20, I made a decision to follow Christ. And a coworker of mine suggested that I go to Hillview Bible Chapel. I thought the name chapel seemed a little odd, but I came. And as a spiritual babe, I was looking for mentors. And Gordon was one of those men. As my elder, he shepherded me. Eventually, as a deacon, I had the privilege to work alongside of him. I learned so much from Gordon, and I wanted to be like him. I wanted to follow him as he followed Christ. In my mid-20s, I was asked to preach right here where I'm standing. I was so nervous. I was so nervous that as an engineer, I know when you need help, what do? You read the manual. I bought 2 books. I'd recommend them, young preachers who stand in my place. One was by A.P. Gibbs, A Preacher and His Preaching. The other was by Charles Spurgeon, maybe you've heard of him, Lectures to My Students. After one of my early sermons, Gordon called me. And as a typical preacher, you're thinking about all the ways you could have done better. And he called to encourage this young man. And he said to me, in all of Silicon Valley, in the whole of Silicon Valley, I've not heard a better message than today. Of course, he only heard one message that day. I'm sure he said something else, but I was so encouraged. In 1986, standing about where I am right now, was Gordon. And I was here. And my wife of almost 41 years was here. And we were married. And since that day in 1986, there were many times that Gordon would check on us and ask, how are you doing? And just as he did our premarital counseling, I'm sure he would have been willing to do postmarital counseling if it was necessary. One final date, September 21st, 2019, not too long ago. Mary and I were here for Bill Patterson's memorial service. I loved Bill as I loved Gordon. And I heard Gordon preach for the last time. In the reception afterwards, I had the privilege to sit next to him and say what I always knew was true. Gordon, you're one of my heroes. And with surprise and the humility of a Christian, he put his head down. I have so many inspirational memories of Gordon Westwood. And I have to acknowledge that the trajectory of my life was influenced and guided by him. He was a Scotsman. And when he stepped down as an elder, right here, they played the pipes. I wonder what music was heard when he arrived in heaven. Gordon, I, along with a lot of others, miss you dearly. Let's look at our text, Leviticus chapter 19. Leviticus 19. We'll start at verse 19, where Dave left off last week. You are to keep my statutes. You, congregation of Israel, are to keep my statutes, says the Lord God. We had a partial list of some of those statutes last week. You shall not turn to idols. You shall not steal. You shall not swear falsely. You shall not oppress. You shall not curse or slander or hate or take vengeance or bear a grudge. Saints, did you get all that? You shall not. No, no, no. And by the way, you shall not glean the corners of your field. And that's the shall nots in half a chapter. And how about the shalls? You shall honor your parents. You shall keep my Sabbath. You shall be impartial. You shall judge fairly. And don't forget to sacrifice the peace offering correctly. And there's more, saints. More in Leviticus, much more. More in other books in the Pentateuch. This is the old covenant. This is the covenant of law. This is the rules that God had given to Moses to give to the congregation of Israel. And God was going to hold them to it. We saw last week the first part of Leviticus 19 overlapped a good portion of the Ten Commandments. The entire chapter could be summarized as a list of commandments. The entire chapter. But there's two commandments covered last week that are worthy of special note. Look at verse 2, 19:2. You should know this verse. It's a commandment. You shall be what? Holy. For I, the Lord, your God, am holy. Take special note of that. Special note of verse 18, another commandment. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Both of these commandments are repeated in the New Testament. And both of them contain, these verses contain his name, Yahweh. Our commander in chief is commanding us. To be in the old covenant, or some would say to be under the old covenant, I understand that, is to live under the pressure of a need to consistently observe a list of rules. Did you get that? You're under the pressure to live with consistency and observe a list of rules. It's important that we understand this aspect of the Old Covenant. It helps us understand why it says in the New Testament, the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. I was at Kaiser on Monday for my quarterly blood work. You know, their procedures at Kaiser have reached a new height in light of current events. You arrive, put on your mask. Stand on the marked location. Sanitize your hands. Answer questions about your health. Have your temperature taken. Stand on another marked location. Read off your Kaiser number. We dare not touch your Kaiser card, because it's been touched by you. Go to chair number 4. Extend your arm. Make a fist. Etc., etc. Is it getting to you? I see some heads shaking. Is it getting to you? A list of procedures that you have to conform to? A little bit like the Old Covenant, isn't it? Do you want to scream? Do you feel like screaming? Go ahead, scream. It's a one-way connection, YouTube friends. Scream. I'll wait. If you did, I hope that was cathartic. You know, I don't know of a verse that says, thou shalt not scream when you're frustrated. But there's a lot of other shall nots, and we're going to cover some of those today. Let's look at verse 19 of chapter 19. You shall keep my statutes. You shall not breed together two kinds of your cattle. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed. You nor wear a garment upon which two kinds of material are mixed together. Don't you love Leviticus? You shall love your neighbor as yourself, and you shall not breed two kinds of cattle right next to each other. And you go like, what? Isn't that what makes this book so interesting? Is there some kind of connection? You know, I'm not a cattle breeder who needs guidance from God. So what is this about? And why does cattle breeding immediately follow love your neighbor as yourself? Are you interested? I'm not a farmer sowing seeds in the field. I am a garment wearer. You're probably grateful for that. I'm wearing a shirt that's a synthetic blend. And I'm in the pulpit. I could have done 100% cotton, but they wrinkle. They wear out. Synthetic blends, the engineer in me, are far superior. Am I breaking a law? Am I in violation of a principle? And what is the principle in this verse anyway? Is there a common principle? Something that we actually can learn from here? I think so. Do you see it? Can you see it? Some things should not be mixed. Some things should not be mixed. No, I'm not going to comment on public restrooms. But some things should not be mixed. I'm going to tell you a story. In 1979, I was working at HP as a chemical technician in a small silicon wafer fab. I was glad that I had high school and college chemistry under my belt by that time. In retrospect, that place was dangerous. 1979, 2-inch wafers, right, for silicon heads. This is Silicon Valley. We were doing 500 nanometers. Now they're doing 10, right? Anyway, dangerous. Why was it dangerous? One, we consumed gallons of concentrated acids a day. We routinely used neurotoxins like trichloroethylene. We had canisters of poisonous gas like phosphine. This was what we did. No wonder I had two sets of twins. At least my skin is not green. I got out of there alive. But regarding keeping things separate, we had baths of acid everywhere. That's how you etch wafers. And they were filled with the good stuff like hydrofluoric acid and nitric acid and sulfuric acid and hydrochloric acid. We had them all. And sometimes in high concentration. Well, one day, and I don't know why, someone, who I still don't know who, decided to make a cyanide solution, a cyanide salt solution, and they placed it near one of those acid baths. Remember, some things shouldn't mix? A salt solution of cyanide and an acid bath, a beaker sitting right next to it. Do you know what happens when you mix an acid with a cyanide salt? Hydrogen cyanide. You know what that is? Think Nazi gas chambers. We could have gassed ourselves. That would have made the news. Wafer fab filled with dead bodies. Some things should not be mixed. We're going to be developing that principle. Some things should be kept separate. You know, in order not to mix things that are different, you have to classify them. You have to know this is this and this is this. This cattle is this breed and this one is this breed. This is a wheat seed and this is a tare or darnel seed. Don't mix them, right? This is polyester and this is cotton. Well, I'll take an exception on that one. But Leviticus is about classifying things, isn't it? The Jews were required to examine things, a whole variety of things, very carefully, and classify them and act appropriately. Is this a clean animal or an unclean animal? Well, let's take a look. Does it chew the cud? Does it have split hooves? I have to examine. And then I have to classify. And then I have to act appropriately. It's unclean. I won't eat it. Is this skin condition? Are you clean or unclean? The priest had to look and make an evaluation. Is this sacrificial animal unblemished? It has to be. Or is there a defect, a mark? Examine and classify. Is something holy or is it profane? You better get that one right. It could cost you. All these things, all these rules that God made, they helped Israel become very good at examining, classifying, and acting appropriately. Isn't that a valuable ability to have today? You know, we talk of the mass media. The mass media is truly massive, insanely massive. I'm inspired by the former CEO of my company. Insanely massive in the internet age. Have you refined your ability to examine, classify, and act accordingly? I'm going to give you three things, you note takers, to take away from this verse. I'm going to first word them in the negative because the verse is worded as shall nots, and then I'll word them in the positive. Do not examine superficially. Do not classify with bias. And do not act according to your natural man or your sinful nature. In the positive form, do examine things carefully. Do classify without bias. And do act according to your new nature. Did you get those? You know, in light of current events, I'd like to talk about racism briefly. Think about it. Wouldn't it be fair to describe a racist as somebody who examines superficially, who classifies with bias, and acts according to the old man or the natural man? Being a racist is the antithesis of loving your neighbor as yourself. It's the antithesis of what we're going to see, to treat aliens and strangers who reside among you as native sons and daughters. Do not examine superficially. You know, there is wheat and there are tares. And in a superficial examination, they look a lot alike. One grain feeds the world. The other grain is poisonous. A conscientious farmer will separate them after careful examination, categorizing them correctly. One is celebrated and stored up in the barn, and the other is burned. You know, I have a bag of grass seed right here. See that, YouTube friends? It has a very interesting claim right here in the corner. It says, 99.9% weed-free. I'd call this a pure bag of grass seed, wouldn't you? 99.9% weed-free? How do you achieve that level of purity? I mean, it'd take a long time to be sifting grass seeds. There's probably 50,000 grass seeds in this little bag. They're so tiny. Examine carefully. I don't know how they did it. The engineer in me is intrigued to find out. But let me ask you, are you 99.9% weed free? 99.9%. And is that good enough? You shall be what? Holy as I am holy. Is that 99.9% God? Oh, let's put a few more nines. Oh, no more nines, please. I might have to examine the untouchable. Well, maybe he needs to examine. Let him assign the number. Do not classify with bias. First, let's stop the pretension. I mean, it really gets to me. The fix-all is to acknowledge no classes of anything. Just eliminate it all, you know. I mean, that was like a John Lennon song or something like that, right? I mean, imagine, like, we're just one uniform blob. It's not true. Stop the pretension, right? There's kinds of cattle, there's kinds of seeds, there's kinds of threads and yarns, there's wheat and there's tares, there's rich and there's poor, there's young and there's old, there's truths and there's errors, there's male and there's females, and there's yourself and your neighbors. We always seem to get that one right. That's the one classification we don't tend to miss on, right? If it's mine or theirs. You know, some things are fixed. God's fixed, can't change. It's best to accept the reality of it. You know, I'd love to be like age fluid. You know, just let me just flow back into my 20s. You know, that'd be kind of nice. I wouldn't have arthritis. I'd have a little more on the top here. Can I be age fluid by choice? I mean, we'd call that psychosis. Bias in your classification. First, you have to classify in order to even have bias in your classification. The problem is not classifying, it's being biased in your classification. People do it. They're going to do it. They may want to stop doing it. They're still going to do it. No good things come out of Galilee, right? That was a classification. Judean Jews saying, hey, who are the better Jews on the block? Galileans or us? Jews had no dealings with Samaritans. That's a classification, isn't it? With a bias. Samaritans are beneath us. A bias. Jesus worked to correct some of these long-held biases. When it comes to bias, though, do you know yourself? The bias with the big B is self-bias. We justify ourselves. Our perception of everything seems to be biased by our self-interest. I had a Pakistani coworker. They spoke Urdu at home. Makes sense. His little girl knew no English till she went off to preschool. We were in a carpool together. And he says to me, you know, my daughter came home from preschool her first day. She learned some things. You want to hear about it? I said, sure. She knows two words in English now. I said, oh, what are they? It's mine. It's mine. Can't you imagine 2 3-year-olds like tugging on the arms of a doll? It's mine. No, it's mine. It's mine. It's mine. Self-bias. The bias with a big B. How do you fix? How do you remedy self-bias? Or bias at all? I'll give you the answer. See as God sees. There's no partiality with him. See as God sees. And then do not act according to your sinful nature. We know this nature pretty well, don't we? It's expressed itself from its earliest days. It's the nature of the first Adam. But we Christians have a new nature. We have a second Adam, Jesus Christ. And he must reign in us if we're truly going to act according to the new nature and not according to the old nature. You know what, Christian? You don't need to memorize that list of do's and don'ts that I covered earlier. You don't need it. With the abiding Spirit of God, he will tell you, you're not loving your neighbor as yourself. I mean, which of these would fit into loving your neighbor as yourself? To steal, to oppress, to curse, to slander, to hate, to take vengeance, to bear a grudge? The list could go on and on. It's amazing how many variety of ways we figure out how to hurt each other versus love each other. You know, the children of Israel needed this list because that's exactly it. They were children. They didn't have the abiding Spirit of God. They didn't have the high priest Jesus interceding for them. They had not been atoned for by his blood. Okay. We're going to buzz through the remaining verses a little more quickly. But in summary, examine carefully, classify without bias, and according to your new nature. Verse 20, now if a man lies carnally with a woman, we know what that means, who is a slave acquired for another man, but who has not been redeemed nor given her freedom, there shall be punishment. Appropriate. They shall not, however, be put to death because she was not free. He shall bring a guilt offering to the Lord to the doorway of the tent of meeting, a ram for a guilt offering. We have a woman who is a slave who was, New American Standard, acquired for another man. This phrase, acquired for another man, has been translated promised to another man or assigned to another man. Some even have translated it betrothed to another man. I think betrothed might be a little too strong. This is a slave who is assigned to another man, probably to be a concubine. She's a slave. If she was betrothed to another man, I mean, that was considered as if you're married. And this sinful act, they would have been stoned. But because she was a slave, she was not complicit. She's a victim. And the man, because the victim was a slave, it will not cost him his life. But he will make a guilt offering of a ram. We can learn from this verse. You go, wait, how does this apply? We don't have slaves. Well, let's think about it from the perspective of God. I like what he says. There shall be punishment. See that? And then we can learn about ourselves. The nature of man. Do we have slaves today? Are there women who have been trafficked or entrapped today? Are there men who exploit vulnerable girls and women today? You know, think Jeffrey Epstein. There's an ugly side to who we are. Best to admit it. Or who we can become. You know, a society that does not protect its vulnerable members will perish. I've told my son many times, son, if anything happens to me, you take care of the missus. I expect you to take care of the missus. He knows exactly what I mean. Men, you have a responsibility. Men, you have a responsibility to protect the women and children under your care. We need to protect the disadvantaged and the vulnerable members of our society. Remember last week? To curse the deaf? To trip up the blind? God cares. God sees. And what about the elderly? In verse 32, we're going to see, honor the aged. Vulnerable members of society. In Santa Clara County, of the 150 people who have died of COVID-19, 65% were over the age of 70. Only 6% of those who've died are 50 or under. No one in Santa Clara County, the records I checked yesterday, no one in Santa Clara County 30 and under has died of COVID-19. So can't we say the youth today, to honor the elderly, are making a sacrifice? God sees. The oldest person I knew, 103-year-old Neona Pubels, died recently. Precious to me. She attended Grace Bible Chapel until perhaps the age of 100. I'm convinced she reached her advanced age in part because of the diligent care of her daughter, Barbara. Honor the aged, it says in verse 32. It was my privilege to attend her 103rd birthday party last November. I knelt beside her wheelchair. I gave her a kiss on the cheek. Taking some liberties there with the 100-year-old, so. She got a big smile, which pleased me. Then she looked at me. Who are you? She stopped using my name perhaps when she was 97 or so, but it didn't matter to me. You know, I watched Gordon and Christine Westwood care for Yaya. Hillview old timers know her. Little did I know at the time my own mother would live with Mary and I for the final 10 years of her life. When you serve the weak and the disadvantaged, when you honor the aged, when you help those who are vulnerable or protect them, you're acting like Jesus Christ. God will punish those who exploit or neglect the vulnerable, and he will bless those who minister to them, since by doing so, you're ministering to him. Verse 23. When you enter the land and plant all kinds of trees for food, then you shall count their fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden to you. It shall not be eaten. But in the fourth year, its fruit shall be holy, an offering of praise to the Lord. In the fifth year, you are to eat its fruit, and its yield may increase to you. I am the Lord your God. We plant fruit trees with the expectation of having fruit. But I would say we struggle with deferred gratification. Our microwave oven went out. I mean, we went like 3 days without a microwave oven. It makes you wonder, how did life exist on earth without microwave ovens? This is the time we live in. One-click purchasing, next-day delivery. When are we going to learn the discipline of delayed gratification? Second principle here, recognize him as the giver. In the fourth year, you give all the fruit to him, all of it. Everything we have is a gift. And we should give thanks in all things and give him the first fruits. And in the fifth year, you are to eat the fruit, and its yield may increase to you. The wait is worth it. I ponder today, are youth getting the message, true love waits? The wait is worth it? You know, it grieves me when I see people making the same mistakes, using the same excuses, and reaping the same consequences over and over and over again. You know what they call that way that people go? The wide way. And it leads to destruction. Determine in your heart, God's way is the best way. If he says 5 years, it's 5 years. It's the best way. Verse 26, you shall not eat anything with blood, nor practice divination or soothsaying. Perhaps divination involved the eating of bloody flesh. I don't know. But those who practice the occult, sometimes I think their thinking is the greater the desecration, the greater the power. And God says they're both wrong, whether together or separate. Do not eat anything with blood or practice divination. Do not round off the side growths of your head, nor harm the edges of your beard. What? The only thing I could think of is don't be like the Egyptians in your hairstyle. You're separate and distinct. Do not cut your body for the dead, verse 28. Nor any tattoo marks on yourself. I am the Lord. A couple principles here. Christians get tattoos. I know it. Is that wrong? You want a yes or no answer? You're not going to get one. But I'm going to give you two principles. One, man looks on the outward appearance. God looks on the heart. What is your heart motive for making a permanent cosmetic modification to your body? What is the motive? Some might say, I'm doing it for myself. I mean, is that a Christian ideal? Some might say, I know my parents will hate it, but I'm an adult. Is that honoring your father and mother? Running out of time, but we need to cover verse 29. Do not profane your daughter by making her a harlot, so that the land will not fall to harlotry and the land become full of lewdness. In Hebrew, the word harlot here is not the word for a cult prostitute, but a common wage-earning harlot. And you go like, what parent would make their daughter a harlot? I mean, what is this commandment about? I'd say an unfit parent. Do you know that 40% of the children born in the United States are born to unwed mothers? Think about that, 40%. And there's a correlation between being born into a family like that and a whole host of other issues. You know, you can make a harlot of a daughter, not so much by volition, but by neglect. What's the message that girls are getting today by the influencers in their lives? And under whose supervision and protection are they as they transition from girls to women? Verse 30, you shall keep my Sabbaths and revere my sanctuary. I am the Lord. Great regular disciplines. Sabbaths are weekly. Verse 31, do not turn to mediums or spiritists. Do not seek them out to be defiled by them. I am the Lord. Who would choose a medium or a spiritist over God? Well, who made a golden calf? After passing through the Red Sea, after receiving their daily bread and water from God himself, after seeing the pillar of fire and the cloud, how do you make a golden calf after that? God doesn't change, but our perception of him can. If during this time you have small God, if you think we're in a big mess and nothing can help me, I need to turn to something new, you're thinking wrong. Don't do it. And then to wrap up, verses 33 and 34. When a stranger resides with you in your land, you shall do him no wrong. The stranger who resides with you shall be with you as a native among you. You shall love him as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Don't harm those strangers, but treat them as natives and love them as yourself. You know, we Americans, we're all immigrants, aren't we? We're all immigrants. I mean, my mother's parents came over here on a steamship. You know, let's remember, just like Israel is instructed to remember, you were aliens once in a strange land. Then finally, verse 37, you shall observe all my statutes and all my ordinances to do them. I am the Lord. All of them. All of them. How do you do it? God can't lower the bar. He can't change himself. What's the answer to this problem? Thank God for our substitute, Jesus Christ, the one who could fulfill the law. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we thank you that we're in a new covenant and we're in a new relationship. We thank you that you've rescued us from the bonds of sin to live a new life. Amen.